Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, September 22nd, 2020. Coming up this hour,
President Trump narrows his choice to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court.
Fed Chair Jay Powell predicts a long, uncertain road for the economic recovery.
And the UK announces fresh coronavirus restrictions to stop a surge in cases.
The chance of a stimulus deal is evaporating, and coronavirus cases in New Jersey are on the rise. I'm John Tucker. Those stories straight ahead.
John Stashower in sports. The Blue Jays pounded the Yankees. Mets lost to the Rays, and the Giants have lost Saquon Barkley for the season.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by IBKR. Investment advisors switch to Interactive Brokers for lowest cost global trading with turnkey custody solutions. No custody fees and no conflicts of your interests at IBKR.com/RIA.
And U.S. futures are treading water after yesterday's sell-off. We're at 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they're up about 3 points. Dow futures down 38. NASDAQ futures up 58. The DAX in Germany is up about 1%. The 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 0.67%. And the yield on the 2-year, 0.13%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.8% at $39.63 a barrel. Nathan.
All right, Karen. We'll get more on the markets in a moment. First, the latest on the battle for the Supreme Court. President Trump says he will name his pick to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg by the end of the week, and he wants her confirmed before Election Day.
I mean, there's really a lot of time. So let's say I make the announcement on Saturday. There's a great deal of time before the election. That'll be up to Mitch in the Senate.
And Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is suggesting a nominee could be approved quickly.
The late iconic Justice John Paul Stevens was confirmed by the Senate 19 days after this body formally received his nomination.
But Democrats say if Republicans rush the process, nothing is off the table, including adding more seats to the high court. Presidential nominee Joe Biden isn't saying whether he'd support that, telling WGAY-TV in Wisconsin.
Because it will shift all the focus. That's what he wants. He never wants to talk about the issue at hand. He always tries to change the subject.
President Trump says he's considering 4 or 5 nominees, but sources tell us his top choice is Amy Coney Barrett. She's a favorite of anti-abortion advocates and is also said to be favored by Mitch McConnell.
Another key election issue is the coronavirus. As U.S. deaths approach 200,000, President Trump graded his work on the outbreak in an appearance on Fox and Friends.
On the job itself, we take an A+. We're rounding the corner. With or without a vaccine, they hate it when I say that, but that's the way it is. We're rounding the corner on the pandemic, and we've done a phenomenal job, not just a good job, a phenomenal job.
Joe Biden disagrees, calling the president's response to the pandemic inadequate and incompetent.
Due to Donald Trump's lies and incompetence in the past 6 months, we've seen one of the gravest losses of American life in history.
Biden spoke in Wisconsin, where infections are increasingly sharp. Cases around the world have now topped 31 million.
Well, meanwhile, in the UK, the government is announcing new restrictions on the virus. Let's get the very latest from Bloomberg's Caroline Hepker in London. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Slowly but surely, COVID restrictions have spread from local to nationwide. The new advice from the UK government, work from home if possible. Health advisers yesterday said cases are now rising rapidly and probably exponentially. The Prime Minister will address Parliament and then the nation tonight. He's expected to say that pubs and restaurants are to close early, whilst plans for crowds at live sports will be reversed. But will the measures be enough? Boris Johnson decided against a second full lockdown here, even as some of his own MPs criticise restrictions that will obviously set back the economic recovery. In London, Caroline Hepker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Caroline, thank you. Back here in the U.S., comments from Jay Powell are front and center. The Fed chairman appears before Congress with Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin today. And Bloomberg Economics correspondent Michael McKee has more.
The Fed Chairman and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin will tell the House Financial Services Committee the U.S. economy needs additional fiscal help. Members of the committee will ask the two, what's happened to the money we already gave you? Congress gave the Treasury $454 billion in March to underwrite Fed lending to distressed businesses, states, and cities. But as of last week, more than half of it was uncommitted. Powell is expected to say having the money helped unclog financial markets, which meant they wouldn't need to spend as much. Lawmakers are considering proposals to take some of it back and use it as part of another stimulus. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Michael, thanks. Powell has often beaten the drum for more stimulus, but not all Fed officials share his view. St. Louis President James Bullard isn't convinced more support is needed. He spoke exclusively with Bloomberg.
I'm hopeful that we still have enough in the pipeline to push us through, get the growth going in the second half of the year here. That certainly seems to be what's happening in the third quarter. I think that'll continue in the fourth quarter and the first part of next year.
Bullard says the U.S. economy may shrink 3-4% this year. That's less than half of what was predicted early in the crisis.
On the corporate front, we have new developments in the proposed tie-up between Oracle and TikTok. President Trump says he may renege on approval of the deal if ByteDance retains control. At the same time, he hopes an IPO for the company could dilute China's influence, and Bloomberg's Shelley Banjo reports.
The contorted math around all of that is because American investors own shares in the parent company that would transfer over into the new company, but that's not really how companies are run. If you're a minority stakeholder, that doesn't really give you any kind of power or say over the decisions that get made at that company.
And Chinese state media is saying Beijing will likely reject the deal, saying the agreement would endanger China's national security.
Shares of Tesla are down more than 3.5% in the pre-market at the start of a busy day for the electric car maker, its annual shareholders meeting, and its first ever battery day. Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky has more.
If history is any guide, CEO Elon Musk could tell shareholders about demand for Tesla vehicles or give updates about new factories. It comes as Tesla races to set a record for quarterly vehicle deliveries. The battery event is of keen interest to investors. Musk has promised many exciting things, but even the smallest improvement in batteries can have a huge impact because they are an electric car's most expensive part. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Larry, thanks. NASDAQ futures higher by 59 points. S&P futures up 2.5. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And at 6:07 on Wall Street, we bring in John Tucker for more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, John.
And Nathan, good morning. The eruption of a partisan battle over replacing Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has damaged already slim prospects for another round of U.S. fiscal stimulus. The story in this report from Bloomberg's Amy Morris.
President Trump's plans to nominate a successor to Ginsburg by the end of the week has stoked ill will between the parties and further diminishes the small hopes for a potential deal that emerged last week when President Trump signaled he'd back a much bigger stimulus than the administration previously supported. Lawmakers will likely get a fresh reminder this week economic growth will prove weaker without renewed fiscal stimulus, with the impact of a $2 trillion March package fading fast. Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The Financial Times is reporting this morning that Facebook will take aggressive and exceptional measures to restrict the circulation of content on its platform. That is if the U.S. presidential election in November turns into chaos or violent civic unrest. They're reportedly testing about 70 different scenarios. President Trump emerged from Air Force One in Swanton, Ohio last night for his Great American Comeback event to a cheering crowd of supporters.
We're going to win 4 more years in the White House. We're doing things that nobody's ever done before. We're doing what nobody's ever done.
President Trump prefers speaking to boisterous crowds, but because of the coronavirus, he'll be giving a pre-recorded address to the UN General Assembly today. The speech comes as he grapples with the virus pandemic, chilly relations between the U.S. and China, and ongoing threats from North Korea and Iran. New York City is among three cities the Trump administration is designating anarchist jurisdictions. That met with a swift response from Mayor Bill de Blasio.
It's all about race, and it's all about attempts to divide and to enthrall his base by attacking the other.
The Justice Department is taking aim at New York, Portland, and Seattle, and could strip federal funding from cities amid protests and cuts to police departments. And the state of New Jersey is seeing rising coronavirus cases. The state is exceeding 200,000 new infections, while its transmission rate, a key measurement, reached the highest in 6 weeks. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts. in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. 6:09 on Wall Street. John Stash Hours here with the Bloomberg Sports Update. John?
Nathan, since 10 straight wins, 2 straight losses for the Yankees, and they've allowed 21 runs. Toronto scored 5 times in the third inning, 4 more in the fourth, beat the Yanks 11-5, and while the Yankees are in the playoffs, they are in a battle with Minnesota for home field in their likely playoff series with the Twins next week, and even with no fans, both teams have been far better at home. The Twins at Target Field are 21-5, and they are currently a game and a half ahead of the Yanks. Certainly doesn't look like the Mets will be playing past this week. They lost to Tampa Bay 2-1. Jacob DeGrom struck out 14 in 7 innings and still took the loss. Monday Night Football in Las Vegas, a successful debut for the Raiders in their new home. They upset the Saints 34-24. Giants fears were realized. Saquon Barkley's got a torn ACL, headed for season-ending surgery. His coach is Joe Judge.
Obviously, losing a player who's such a good teammate, all right, and someone who's such a hard worker on the field will impact your team in a lot of ways. Saquon's a tremendous player. We have even more respect for him as a person. I personally hate it for this guy, as hard as he's worked and as much impact he has for this team.
Question is, will Barkley be the same back next year? Adrian Peterson had this injury, came back and rushed for over 2,000 yards. Giants will look into signing veteran free agent back Devontae Freeman. They've also lost wideout Sterling Shepard to a toe injury. He will not play Sunday against the 49ers, who are really banged up off their win over the Jets, though their quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, may be able to play Sunday against the Giants. Stanley Cup final now tied at 1. Tampa Bay beat Dallas 3-2. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
Thanks, John. The owners of America's empty Major League Baseball stadiums can get some financial relief from the $3.9 trillion municipal bond market. Yankee Stadium, which sold bonds for the park in the Bronx, is refinancing its debt through a $923 million sale this week. And a Texas agency that sold bonds for the retractable roof stadium where the Houston Astros play is also completing a refinancing that will push off debt payments as hotel and car rental tax revenue plunged due to COVID-19. Mixed markets on the futures. And it's just before 6:12 now on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
It continues.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks rebounding from yesterday's sell-off, and U.S. stock index futures reversing declines as tech shares once again show resilience. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 2 points this morning. NASDAQ futures are up 49, while the Dow futures are down 51. The DAX in Germany is higher, up 0.9%. 10-year Treasury little change, yield 0.66%. The yield in the 2-year, 0.13%. COMEX crude oil up 1.6% or 63 cents at $39.94 a barrel. COMEX gold is down about 0.2% or $2.90 at $19.07.70 an ounce. The euro 1.1741 against the dollar. British pound 1.2792 and the yen 104.52. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
And good morning, Karen. President Trump's plans to nominate a successor to Ruth Bader Ginsburg by the end of the week is imperiling the chances for another round of U.S. fiscal stimulus. The president's move has stoked a wave of Democratic opposition and ill will. A wildfire scorching its way through brush and timber from the mountains to the desert northeast of Los Angeles is threatening more than 1,000 homes. And Tropical Storm Beta has made landfall on the upper Texas coast. Beta is the ninth named storm that made landfall in the continental U.S. this year. Sports, Monday Night Football, the Raiders beat the Saints. And the Stanley Cup Finals, Tampa Bay, even the series with Dallas. Baseball, Yankees, Mets both lose, and the Nationals win. Global news 24 hours a day, on air, and a Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, John, thanks. 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's get more now on this upcoming upcoming fight over the Supreme Court vacancy and what it could mean for the rest of policymaking in Washington. Terry Haynes is with us now, founder of Pangea Policy. Great, as always, to have you on, Terry. And, of course, President Trump, as John mentioned, does plan to name his nominee by the end of this week. He wants her confirmed by Election Day. First off, do you see that kind of tight timeline happening?
Good morning, Nathan. And today I'm cautiously positive that that happens. My view is that I'm about non-consensus, about 55% likely that a new Supreme Court justice gets confirmed before the election for a number of reasons. One, there's a path to get to 50 votes, at least 50 votes plus a Pence tiebreaker. A lot depends on whether the nominee is viewed as divisive or consensus, and a lot of the people that are being considered have been confirmed by the Senate relatively recently, so you've got a bit of a feel for that. Thirdly, if you're in the White House, what you have to be looking at is whether or not there's going to be any kind of clarity from the immediate clarity from the election results. And, you know, I'm with markets on this and have been for some time that there's really not. There's going to be a lot of post-election volatility. So, you know, if you're the White House, you got to do whatever you can to try to get something happen. And finally, you know, the politics, the more Trump pushes, the more Democrats seem to overreact, talking about packing the court and things like that. And frankly, that helps Trump and helps Republicans. So there's a lot of reasons to go get it.
All right. Well, let's talk about the possibility of a nominee being perceived as divisive. It seems as though the favorite in this field of 4-5 that the president keeps talking about is Judge Amy Coney Barrett. How do you think her nomination would be perceived on Capitol Hill?
What I'm about to say is very unfair to Judge Barrett, but I think I have to say it. You know, the White House has been preparing for a couple of years, apparently, to nominate Judge Barrett to the Supreme Court. Somebody's got a quote saying that from Trump saying that, you know, he was saving her for the Ginsburg seat, that sort of thing. And, you know, the early bidding is playing out that way. Both sides have characterized Judge Barrett as a divisive figure. And, you know, that probably doesn't bear out solely from her jurisprudence or her record as teaching or anything else, but that's the way it's going to go. But there are other possible nominees, including Judge Lagoa of the 11th Circuit, who may not be perceived as being that divisive and may politically put a lot of Democrats back on their heels. Judge Lagoa was confirmed just last year to the 11th Circuit with 27 Democrats voting yes. So the White House has got some choices in how they want to play this. And, you know, as I've said, I think a lot depends for the court fight on whether or not the nominee is perceived as either divisive or consensus. And we're not going to know that until this weekend.
With so much attention now on the Supreme Court vacancy, what does that mean for the prospects of another round of fiscal stimulus, something that both sides of the political aisle have been stuck on for months now?
My view of the stimulus a month ago was that it was 10% likely, and unfortunately that hasn't changed. I think the rhetoric around the Ginsburg successor only heightens that likelihood. You know, I'll give you a little bit more than lightning striking that it happens, but I don't think so. And as you pointed out earlier this hour, there's even some talk from the Fed that that's the case. There, you know, Governor Bullard's comments saying that that may be enough. And as we know, you know, there's still a lot of money there that's available that could be programmed or reprogrammed. But at this point, with six weeks before the election, I think both sides are content to ride it out and frankly use it as an election talking point.
Just 30 seconds left here, Terry. Is there a risk that the government goes into shutdown if they can't pass a stopgap measure?
There's always a risk. I think in this case, it's a tiny risk. Both sides have agreed to take that off the table and put forward a continuing resolution for government spending at existing levels through sometime in mid-December, and I think that's very likely to happen.
All right, Terry Haynes, as always, great getting your insights on what's happening in Washington. Terry Haynes is the founder of Pangea Policy. And as we look at the markets this morning, still seeing mixed action in the futures contracts. S&P futures are up almost 4 points now. Dow futures are lower, down 28. NASDAQ futures leading the way with the gains here in the U.S. They're up 63 points. European stocks moving higher this morning. The 10-year is down now by 1/32nd. Yield back to 0.66%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.13%. And you're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's 6:25 on Wall Street, and Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for special lease and finance offers. Land Rover above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130.
To Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991.
To Boston.
Bloomberg 1061.
To San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960.
To the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119.
And around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. S&P futures and NASDAQ futures are rising. This is after the fourth day of losses for the S&P 500. That's the longest stretch since February. Meantime, President Trump is looking to name a successor to Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg by this Friday or Saturday. The president says he has four or five picks in mind.
The only thing I'll say for the women, it will be a woman.
And the woman at the top of the list is Judge Amy Coney Barrett. Sources tell us she's met with the president and White House counsel and is favored by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Doubts are emerging about Oracle's deal to take over TikTok. President Trump says he may still renege on approval. And as Bloomberg's Jody Schneider reports, the Chinese government is also signaling reluctance to sign off on the partnership.
Shortly after comments that President Trump made, the editor-in-chief of the Global Times, which is Chinese state-affiliated media, tweeted that officials in Beijing would likely reject the deal because the agreement would endanger China's national security. And they went on to say interests and dignity.
Sources tell us U.S. national security officials are concerned the proposed deal leaves data for more than 100 million Americans in the hands of a Chinese firm.
In the U.K., the government is telling people to work from home again if possible. Prime Minister Boris Johnson is preparing to announce new restrictions on bars and restaurants in a bid to halt a surge in coronavirus cases.
For investors today, a few key items to keep an eye on. Fed Chair Jay Powell and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin testify on pandemic relief before Congress. They're likely to face questions about the use of federal funds and what more should be done to aid the recovery.
Tesla holds its annual shareholder meeting, followed by what it calls its Battery Day presentation. Shares of the electric car maker are down 3% in early trading.
And Nike reports earnings after the close of U.S. trading. Store closings and a lack of sporting events could weigh on sales despite heightened demand for athleisure wear during the pandemic.
S&P futures are up 7 points this morning. Dow futures down 18. NASDAQ futures up 88. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. The DAX in Germany is up 1.1%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 0.67%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.13%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.6%, up 63 cents at $39.94 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed at $19.10.80 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1757 against the dollar, and the yen 104.42. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Okay, Karen, thanks. It's 6:33 on Wall Street, and John Tucker has more on what's going on around the world. John?
And good morning, Nathan. In the state of New Jersey, a key measure of the coronavirus has reached its highest rate in 6 weeks. The story this morning from Bloomberg's Tom Busby.
New Jersey on Monday reported exceeding 200,000 novel coronavirus cases. Its transmission rate, a key measurement, reached 1.12%. A measure above 1 indicates the virus is spreading. The New Jersey rate hasn't been that high since August 7th. Now, some schools and universities have returned to in-person classes this month. And on September 4th, the state allowed indoor dining, performances, and films to resume with restrictions. The state, which reported its first case March 4th, has reported just over 16,000 deaths. Tom Busby, Bloomberg Radio.
New Jersey is now offering to cover child care payments for parents who are working full-time and can't afford to stay home with their kids for remote learning.
And all you will need is a proof of income and a remote learning notice or announcement from your child's school.
Governor Phil Murphy says the $150 million program will only fund licensed or registered child care providers. It covers care for kids age 5 to 13. Families with incomes up to $75,000 a year can apply online. As President Trump's campaign pushes law and order, Attorney General William Barr said New York City, Seattle, and Portland have become anarchies that aren't performing basic governmental functions to keep people safe. The city's mayors are now blasting back. Bill de Blasio of New York, Ted Wheeler of Portland, and Jenny Durkin of Seattle are rejecting the threat as what they say is thoroughly political and unconstitutional. Tropical storm Beta flooding southeastern Texas as it grinds toward the shore, causing streets in southwest Houston to flood. At least 20 water rescues from vehicles were made in the city. Jamie Garcia helped this man out of his submerged car.
You're okay, right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You're safe, man. All right, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're well welcome.
The storm could linger for days, pounding the coast with heavy rain as it meanders toward Louisiana. And the eruption of the partisan battle over replacing Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has damaged already slim prospects for another round of U.S. fiscal stimulus, threatening to undermine the recovery in the coming months. The prospect of a contentious Senate confirmation process, along with the need to pass a vital stopgap spending bill by the end of this month, raises challenges for lawmakers to get coronavirus relief done before they're scheduled to break for campaigning. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. It's almost 6:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stashow.
All right, Nathan, the Yankees trying to set up their postseason rotation. So they started rookie Michael King in Buffalo, followed him with Jonathan Loaisiga. Didn't go well. Blue Jays, over the third and fourth inning, scored 9 runs on 10 hits off the two Yankee pitchers. Jays went on to win 11-5, only that close due to a Mike Tauchman 3-run double in the ninth. Aaron Boone on the struggles on the mound.
They did a lot of their damage with two strikes, and those two innings seem like, I have to go back and look for sure, but, you know, probably 7-8 hits and or walks with two strikes, just so that, you know, the inability to put guys away tonight really cost us and had the game get away from us.
Pitching should be better tonight with Garrett Cole starting his next start after that. It'll be a week from tonight, the playoff opener, almost certainly against Minnesota. The Yankees' record in postseason games versus the Twins is 19-2. The Mets, who on Sunday had 3 hits, last night had 4 hits. No support for Jacob DeGrom. They lost to Tampa Bay 2-1. The Oakland A's, first team to clinch a division title. They took the AL West. The Raiders, no longer in Oakland. Their first game in Las Vegas, a 34-24 upset of the Saints. It's official. The Giants, Saquon Barkley, out for the year. Torn ACL. Not the only injured running back. Carolina's Christian McCaffrey will miss 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. And no team has more injuries than the 49ers, who just beat the Jets. And on Sunday, we'll be back at MetLife to face the Giants. Their top pass rusher, Nick Bosa, is done for the year. The Niners are blaming the new turf at MetLife, but the NFL says it meets standards. Stanley Cup Final, Tampa Bay beat Dallas 3-2. The series is tied at 1. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. It's 6:37 on Wall Street, and this is Bloomberg Daybreak. The Fed is in focus once again today with Chair Jay Powell set to testify before Congress. Inflation has been a big question for the central bank, and one Fed official believes it could exceed target soon. St. Louis President Jim Bullard says the central bank's new approach to lifting prices will start to work as it reacts less aggressively to the pandemic. Here he is speaking with Bloomberg Global Economics editor Kathleen Hayes.
We react a little less aggressively to the shocks, then I think that will lead to higher inflation expectations, and we'll end up exceeding the target. And if there was ever a time when you thought that, you know, maybe the ingredients for inflation are in place, you've got gigantic fiscal deficits combined with a more relaxed central bank and really rapid growth, off the charts rapid growth. So you probably will get some inflation, I think, even in the near term here over the next year. So I don't think it'll be quite as quiescent as it was before the pandemic.
You also said on Friday that you see, as many people do, this, you know, massive rebound in third quarter GDP. you know, people are looking 25%, 30%. You said it's going to, another reason why it's going to help get inflation on track to 2%. I want to ask you a couple specifics about this, though. Doesn't look like there's going to be a stimulus package passed before the election, and hard to say when it will be passed after. What difference does that make, if any, to your forecast?
Yeah, I think that the original fiscal package that was passed in the March, April, several bills altogether, but the CARES Act in particular, that was really calibrated to a bigger shock than the one that has actually developed. We're certainly in a pandemic, and it's a big shock. It's causing a lot of disruption, but not as big as what they were thinking at that time. And so what we ended up doing is borrowing 10 to 14% of GDP. But if you look at current forecasts for this year, it looks like GDP or national income, household income, will only be down 3 to 4%. So you really borrowed quite a bit here to cover a hole, which now doesn't look like it'll be as big. So I'm hopeful that we still have enough in the pipeline to push us through, get the growth going in the second half of the year here. That certainly seems to be what's happening in the third quarter. I think that'll continue in the fourth quarter and the first part of next year.
And that was St. Louis Fed President Jim Bullard speaking to Bloomberg's Kathleen Hayes. You can catch more of that conversation, including the full interview, online at Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Business app. S&P futures higher by 6 points. Dow futures down 16. NASDAQ futures up 73. That's a gain of 0.2%. 10-year, little changed. 0.66% is the yield on the 10-year note. 2-year yield, 0.13%. This is Bloomberg. And it's just before 6:41 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for special lease and finance offers. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And European stocks rebounding from yesterday's sell-off. U.S. stock index futures reversing declines as tech shares once again show resilience. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up about 5 points now. NASDAQ futures up 69. Dow futures lower, down 31. The DAX in Germany is up 1.1%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 0.66%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.13%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.6% or 63 cents at $39.94 a barrel. COMEX gold is up less than a tenth of a percent, up $1.40 at $19.12 an ounce. The euro, 1.1761 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2843. And the yen is at 104.44. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
And Karen, Senate Republicans moving quickly to set their strategy for confirming President Trump's Supreme Court nominee. The senators focusing on whether they can move fast enough to get it done before Election Day. The U.S. is approaching 200,000 deaths from COVID-19. Meanwhile, Apple is predicting a permanent change with remote work. And Tropical Storm Beta flooding southeastern Texas. It's the Atlantic's 23rd storm for this year. Sports, Monday Night Football, the Raiders beat the Saints. In the Stanley Cup Finals, Tampa Bay even their series with Dallas. And in baseball, Yankees and Mets both lose, the Nationals win. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. We're at 6:48 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories from our nation's capital include President Trump zeroing in on Judge Amy Coney Barrett as his top choice to succeed the late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Joe Biden isn't saying whether he would add more justices to the high court. And Chairman Powell will say the U.S. faces a long, uncertain recovery when he testifies later this morning to the House Financial Services Committee. Also making news, as John mentioned, Senate Republicans crafting their strategy to confirm President Trump's high court pick. Let's get more on all these stories from Bloomberg U.S. politics editor Kathleen Hunter. Of course, Kate, we've heard this week from the president saying that he has four or five nominees in mind that he wants are confirmed before Election Day. Can Republicans in the Senate pull that off?
Well, I think that's precisely, Nathan, what the Republicans in the Senate are trying to figure out right now. They're going to meet today, and this is their typical, you know, Tuesday caucus lunch where they, and this will be, of course, the first one they're having since this development. And so I think that's what they're trying to assess. It seems like there is widespread support for considering a nominee this year, but the big question is whether they'll consider it before or after the election.
Right. So where do things stand at the moment, and what is the calculus that senators are looking at when they decide whether or not to do it before or after Election Day?
Well, it's really a numbers game. You know, there's 53 Senate Republicans, so that means that, you know, they need about three or four of them to break away and join with Democrats to be in trouble on the Republican side. And so I think they're looking at a few folks, Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Cory Gardner, potentially, of Colorado, Mitt Romney of Utah. There's sort of this handful of folks that are going to be pivotal in determining whether or not this is going to move forward before or after Election Day. And I think what they're going to try to do is talk to those folks today. And then, you know, of course, it's going to depend on who the nominee ends up being. But some of this is just an institutional policy question. And so I think that's what they're going to try to suss out with greater detail.
Is there anything that Democrats can do to try to slow down or stop this process being in the minority?
There's really not a whole lot they can do, and part of that has to do with the changes that have come about in recent years, a big part of that, the Senate rules, where it used to require many more votes than it does now. Now it just requires a simple majority to get a Supreme Court justice through the chamber. And so that change, which came about a few years ago, has really sort of completely overhauled the way in which Supreme Court nominees are considered, in the sense that you no longer really have to get the support of the minority party, and that has the effect in this case of really limiting what tools Democrats have at their disposal to try to slow down and certainly to block this nomination.
Now, one phrase we've heard a lot from Democrats this week is that if a nominee is confirmed quickly, nothing is off the table, and something that we've heard a lot includes the possibility of stacking the court, expanding the number of seats on the high court. Where does Joe Biden sit on that? I guess he was asked about that this week.
He was. He was asked about it. And yesterday he said that he didn't really, he basically declined to comment on it. And so he in the past has opposed the idea of, you know, what you described, which is referred to as court packing. He has said in the past that it's not good, in part because I think there are fears out there that, you know, if one side starts saying, well, we don't like the nominees, so we're just going to add more of our nominees, then nothing stops the other party when they get to power and doing the same thing. And suddenly, you know, not to be facetious, but you have, you know, a 50-member Supreme Court where each president just adds more members. And that obviously has, you know, institutional issues that it breeds. And so I think that's been the concern that's been out there. But the problem that Biden has is that this is an idea right now that's being pushed by the more liberal wing of the party. And that's a faction of the party that he already has some trouble with. And so I think the concern for Biden, or the trick for Biden, is to try to thread this needle and not seem too closed off to the idea that he alienates liberals while at the same time not committing himself to it.
What's the difficulty, though, for Biden to try to thread that needle, given that in his past statements on the Senate floor when he was a senator, he vocally opposed the idea of expanding the court?
Well, that certainly does make it tricky. I mean, I think for him, you know, he's a former judiciary chairman. His record on not just this issue, but a lot of issues is very long, decades long in many cases. And so, you know, he certainly has been on the record against court packing in the past. And I think that in those terms, the fact that he's declining to repeat that opposition is the way that he's trying to thread the needle for now. And I think if he does decide to show some additional openness to that idea, he would probably talk about the fact, really, that the circumstances on the ground have changed. Back when he opposed it, you know, that was when there was a filibuster-proof majority required to get a set Supreme Court nominee through. That's not the case anymore.
All right, let's talk about some of the nominees President Trump is considering. And one name that seems to be emerging as the front runner is Judge Amy Coney Barrett. What's her appeal for the president?
Well, that's twofold, I'd say. You know, primarily she has strong credentials, strong anti-abortion credentials. We know that's a very important issue for the Republican base and could have the effect of, you know, helping to spur Trump's most loyal supporters to the polls on Election Day. She's also from the Midwest, and as a Midwesterner, we know that some of these Rust Belt states like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan are going to be very important this year, so she might have an appeal that way as well. And I think those are sort of the two things. Oh, in addition, also Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, that's apparently his preference. And so those three factors really, I think, are working in her favor.
All right. Of course, there's so much attention on the Supreme Court vacancy right now. It's almost diverting attention in Washington from just about everything else. But I know investors are going to be keeping a close eye and ear on what Chairman Powell and Secretary Mnuchin have to say to the House Financial Services Committee. What are we expecting there later this morning?
Well, we did get to see some testimony from Powell yesterday that he prepared testimony that he plans to deliver. And basically the message coming from the Fed chairman is going to be the economy is improving, but it still has a long way to go before it's fully recovered from the pandemic and the effects of the pandemic. And so I think that's going to be the message. And, you know, in other times or this time last week, that message might have been more of an effective cudgel to try to get legislators to agree and both sides to agree and move off of the impasse they've had over stimulus legislation for several months now. But, you know, the reality is that the political world in Washington changed when the Supreme Court vacancy opened up. And I think getting anything through is going to be very, very difficult given the heightened level of political acrimony over this vacancy.
And that hearing begins at 10:30 a.m. Wall Street time on Capitol Hill. Bloomberg Radio will have extended coverage of it throughout the day. Bloomberg U.S. Politics Editor Kathleen Hunter, thank you as always. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 6:55 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report, brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology. NJIT makes industry-ready engineers in more than 20 fields. If it's engineering, it's at NJIT, more at njit.edu. Now, here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. U.S. scientists say ice in the Arctic Ocean melted to its second lowest level on record this summer, triggered by global warming along with natural forces. The extent of ice-covered ocean at the North Pole and extending further south to Alaska, Canada, Greenland, and Russia reached its summertime low of 1.4 million square miles last week. The National Snow and Ice Data Center says this year's melt is second only to 2012, when the ice shrank to 1.3 million square miles. Sources say the Justice Department is poised to brief states today on its pending antitrust lawsuit against Alphabet's Google. By the end of September, the federal investigation into the company is expected to produce the most significant antitrust lawsuit since the U.S. case against Microsoft, which was filed in 1998. And Apple chief executive Tim Cook says he's been impressed by employees' ability to operate remotely and predicts that some new work habits will remain after the pandemic. Cook made the comments during an interview at the Atlantic Festival. The comments contrast with the views of other executives, such as Netflix's Reed Hastings, who recently called remote work a pure negative. And that's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. Futures this morning, S&P futures anyway, higher, up about 7 points. NASDAQ futures up about 73. Dow futures lower, down 8. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 0.66%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.13%. We are getting earnings from AutoZone crossing the Bloomberg, and fourth quarter comp sales beating analyst estimates, up almost 22% in the quarter. Bloomberg surveillance straight ahead with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.